Welcome to the Story Talk, episode number one. My name is Laura Smith. I'll be your host. I love thinking about and talking about movies. I believe that they change the way that we think, and so they change who we are. Thus, it would behoove us to know more about what the stories that we are consuming are saying, not only to our minds, but to our hearts. Hopefully you will find something valuable in this podcast today that you can take to inspire your own discussions about not just the movie that I talk about, but all the movies that you're consuming, because they are all important to your brain. Today I'd like to talk about Doctor Strange, which is a Marvel Studios movie produced or at least released in 2016. The main story follows Dr. Stephen Strange, who's a neurosurgeon, who experiences a tragic car accident in which his hands are more or less disabled as far as neurosurgery is concerned. He is forced, because of this injury, to seek out different methods of healing, and this takes him into the East to a place called the Kamar-Taj, where he finds a group of sorcerers to teach him mental mastery and a metaphysical understanding of how to use, as they say, power harnessed from other dimensions of the multiverse in order to heal himself. Of course, you know, since it's a Marvel movie, that he doesn't just find some healing and then go back to his life. He ends up caught in the middle of a struggle for the fate of the Earth and becomes a key component in what happens to the Earth. There are some really predictable aspects of this movie. For example, there is a lot of fighting and a lot of stabbing and punching. There are magical objects that make their owners extra powerful or give them special abilities. Because it's a melodrama, there are very clear lines between the good guys, quote unquote, and the bad guys. I use scare quotes around those because those are really mushy and not very useful terms in analyzing the film, but they do come from the common vernacular and they help us to sketch out the general movements of the story. That there are good guys and there are bad guys, and the good guys and bad guys basically never question their goodness or badness. And by not questioning their goodness or badness, I mean that on the whole, Caecilius, who is the villain, and his acolytes, they don't stop in the middle of their effort to take over the world or to bring the world under the control of Dormammu, who's like the super, super villain. They never stop in the middle of this effort to say, hey, are we sure this is a good idea? And similarly, the good guys never stop in the middle of fighting Caecilius in order to say, hey, maybe Caecilius is right. There's one point at which Doctor Strange thinks that, hey, maybe we're all wrong. Maybe this is all bad. Or rather, maybe the people that I or Doctor Strange thought were good guys are actually bad guys. Maybe they're all trying to take over the world or subjugate the people of the world. But he never questions the value of preserving the world. The goal is always clearly defined in that way. So these are all predictable elements of a Marvel movie. When you walk into the movie, you wouldn't expect to see a purely psychological thriller. You expect a lot of action and a lot of magic and a lot of fantasy and also humor. There's a lot of humor. The costumes are amazing and the sets are elaborate and the CG effects are beautiful. All of that is consistent with the other Marvel movies. However, with this Marvel movie, I think that there is definitely a heavier emphasis on the philosophical thriller side of the story and a slightly more tempered approach to the physical confrontation aspects of the story. This makes it really interesting for story analysis because there's plenty to discuss. I found a lot of questions that the movie asks through its runtime that are pretty deep questions, not questions that you would typically expect in a purely action-adventure film. For example, one of the main questions is, what is worth living? Or conversely, worth dying for? Is it fame? Is it glory? Is it money? Is it fast cars? Is it prestige and renown? Is it self-righteousness? Each of the characters seems to bring a different perspective on this question, and Doctor Strange has to navigate all of these different answers to the question to try and decide what is worth living or dying for. In the beginning of the movie, Doctor Strange is a very self-centered neurosurgeon who has it pretty much worked out for his life, and he's got the money, he's got the cars, he's got the fame, he has the respect of his colleagues. But when an accident causes him to lose those things, he loses the ability to perform surgeries and thus loses his job, loses his friends and associates at the hospital. Eventually, he's so frustrated that he pushes away even the few friends, or rather the only friend that he has left, who's also his love interest, Christine. He pushes all of these people away and he's left with nothing. Everything that he thought was worth living for has been taken away. And the one suggestion that there might be other reasons to live, he rejects point blank. So from Doctor Strange, we have the initial theory that life is worth living for yourself. And when his hands are taken away, his quest is to regain that ability to live for himself. Christine, a love interest at the beginning, poses the suggestion that maybe it's worth living for relationships when she sees how miserable Doctor Strange is with his unsuccessful quest for healing. This is where he rejects that possibility and continues searching for a way to live for himself. And he meets an extraordinary healing patient who had been going to the hospital with a serious injury and managed to recover from it. And he uses this person as his informant to find out about the Kamertage, which he goes to later. But this person, Pangborn, in talking to Doctor Strange, insinuates that the thing worth living for is normalcy. Or it could be inferred that he agrees with Christine, that it's more about like the normal relationships that make life worth living. So already at this point in the movie, we have two theories. Then Doctor Strange goes to the Kamertage and he meets these sorcerers. They teach him magic. He begins fighting in a pretty epic good and evil battle. And from the sorcerers at the Kamertage, he doesn't get a direct answer right away. He receives some questions, especially from the Ancient One, when she says, "Who are you in this vast multiverse, Doctor Strange?" She can tell that he is looking for the answer to this question, what is worth living or worth dying for. But she doesn't tell him her answer until later. In the meantime, Doctor Strange starts pursuing his mastery of the mystic arts. And here he starts to connect with his old goals of living for himself and becoming the best sorcerer that he can become. Fortunately for Doctor Strange, his particular set of gifts makes him especially capable as a sorcerer. He has a photographic memory, he's very good at book learning, and so he reads through the many resources that the sorcerers have to offer quickly and begins experimenting with them right away. And he, as a neurosurgeon, has been trained with a high degree of precision in his movements. And even though he can't use his hands, you can see in the way that he practices the mystic arts that he still has a very capable mind and body for movement. Eventually, his mastery of the mystic arts and the escalating power of the villain, Caecilius, lead Doctor Strange and Caecilius into a face-to-face encounter in which Doctor Strange basically disarms Caecilius and has a conversation with him about what is worth living or dying for. And Caecilius's answer is that living forever is worth living for, or rather endless preservation is worth living for, which is why he is inviting the dark magical being Dormammu to come and take over the earth, because he believes that that will preserve it forever. You could also infer from his conversation with Caecilius that Caecilius might think that power is the most important thing to live or die for, or maybe even that consistency is the most important thing. And I infer that because he is really offended that the Ancient One has been using the so-called dark dimension to draw power from for years, when she forbids accessing the dark dimension to all of her students. So obviously Caecilius places a high priority on being consistent, being unhypocritical. In the series of chases and battles that follow, the Ancient One who has been Doctor Strange's mentor is fatally wounded, and as she is dying, she has a conversation with him in her astral form, in her spirit form, where she tells Doctor Strange that arrogance and fear still keep you from learning the simplest and most significant lesson of all. And he says, which is? And she says, it's not about you. And here you get the Ancient One's philosophy on what is worth living or dying for, which is that others are worth living and dying for, just like Christine had said in the beginning. I love this moment from a story writing point of view because it offers such consistency for the whole movie, that this is a lesson that has been in front of Doctor Strange from the very beginning of the movie, but that he wasn't ready to learn until the Ancient One and his mentor is dying and telling him in her final communications to him that this is the most important thing that he needs to learn. When she says this to him, he's obviously taken aback, and that could be because he had never thought about it that way, or maybe because he didn't know that was a lesson he had to learn, or maybe because he's remembering the way that Christine told him this in the very beginning, for him presumably many months ago, but he hasn't been ready to accept that until then in the movie. But whatever the reason, we can tell that Doctor Strange internalizes this lesson in a new way, that he accepts this as his answer to. In the subsequent scenes, you see him harness every piece of training that he has received throughout the movie in order to confront Dormammu and prevent him from taking over the Earth. And of course, the most climactic moment of the movie, when Doctor Strange is facing down Dormammu and has created a time loop which affects him but doesn't affect Dormammu, because Dormammu exists outside of time, he prevents Dormammu from taking over the Earth by standing in his way over and over and over again as Dormammu kills him probably a dozen times. And Dormammu, getting really frustrated, says, "You can't do this forever." And he says, "Actually, I can't. This is how things are now. You and me trapped in this moment endlessly forever." And Dormammu says, "Then you will spend eternity dying." And Doctor Strange says, "Yes, but everyone on Earth will live." And at this moment, you see that Doctor Strange has actually accepted responsibility for other people in a way that he has not done throughout the whole movie. He was always a doctor. He was always invested in saving lives. He was always very good under pressure and very talented and very precise. He was always good at connecting different theorems and pieces of knowledge in order to be a good surgeon or be a good sorcerer. But he has applied all of these talents in a new way by the end of the movie. And instead of using them to promote himself and simply to assuage the fear of failure, as he admits was his main motivation, in this confrontation with Dormammu, he's using all of these talents in order to preserve and protect other people. And it is completely without glory. No one on Earth would ever know that he is doing this for them. It is without money. He's not being paid to do it. It is without any kind of physical comfort or even mental comfort. For someone as intelligent as Doctor Strange, I'm sure that the prospect of forever living the same moment over and over and over again would be pretty daunting, because he has so much to think about and because he loves learning so much. By the time Doctor Strange is done with Dormammu, he returns to Earth, and Dormammu has begged to be set free rather than be living this same moment over and over again. And when he returns to the Earth, he has succeeded in preserving what is most worth living and dying for to him, which are the people, especially the people that he knows, but the people of Earth and the many relationships that exist there. And then in a really brilliant stroke from the story writers, they give the villains what they believe is most worth living or dying for as well at the end of the movie. When Doctor Strange returns, he says, "You're going to get what you always wanted," which is, I think he says it as eternal life as part of the One. That is, that they get to exist forever with Dormammu. Of course, it's obvious that that is going to be pretty unpleasant. This exploration of such a deep question is something I really admire about the story writers from Doctor Strange, that they didn't shy away from addressing such a deep and difficult and also fairly controversial question in our day about what is worth living and dying for. I think the reason they were able to do that in such a successful way was that they represented so many different answers to that question, that not everyone in the movie has the same answer to the question of what is most worth living and dying for. And even though the answer of others and relationships is a clear winner by the end of the movie, each of the other perspectives is given a moment to hold some weight. This leads into another way that I think Doctor Strange helps us to think about things, which is that this movie really emphasizes that there is more than one way to answer a question. With Doctor Strange's pursuit of healing, in the beginning he's completely dependent upon the hospital for the emergency care he receives in order to save his hands. However, as further treatments don't work, he starts looking into experimental treatments, and it only gives very brief touches on what he's thinking might work, but it seems like he's tried a lot of different experimental medicines, and nothing is working. This is what leads him to seek out Pangborn, and then to spend his last cent going to the Kamar-Taj, where he's finally softened up enough by the lack of success in every other area that he's willing to try the more internally rigorous methods proposed by the Ancient One. Another way this movie offers this theme of having more than one answer to a question is when Doctor Strange first meets the Ancient One. He gets really frustrated at her because she is talking about chakras and meditation and acupuncture points. So frustrated, in fact, that he lets his old enemy rudeness out at her, and he says, "You are just a momentary speck in an indifferent universe." And his obvious subtext for this is that she doesn't matter, and that no one really matters. And this bears through his philosophy that you might as well live for yourself, you know, grab what you can because nobody's going to grab it for you, that kind of philosophy. And he's saying, because you are so small, you are not significant. And her answer to him, instead of answering it right away, she sends him on a kind of internal metaphysical roller coaster where she starts talking to him about how he is just a momentary speck in an indifferent universe. And actually, there are many universes and many dimensions of this universe, and that what he knows is only a very small part of one universe. And this is some beautiful storytelling, because instead of answering the question directly, she says the same thing back to him with completely different subtext. So when she says, "Who are you in this vast multiverse, Doctor Strange?" her subtext is, "You can be significant even though you are small. But do you choose to be significant, or do you choose to be insignificant?" And this is kind of the first part of her main message to Doctor Strange. The second part is fulfilled later in the conversation she has with him before she dies, where she says to Doctor Strange, "You could have your old life back, you could have your hands again, and the world would be all the lesser for it." Her entire philosophy about the multiverse is that even small things can make big changes. Now, I'm sure that there are other ways that the movie also addresses this same theme of having multiple answers to one question, but I'm going to move on to some of the other themes that I found in this movie that were really interesting. Another theme that I really liked in this movie was his hands. His hands are a symbol of Doctor Strange's power at the beginning when he's doing these surgeries. But by the end of the movie, they are still kind of a symbol of his power, but they're also a symbol of what he has learned. They're a symbol of his new humility about his power. After the Ancient One tells him that he could have his old life back and that he could have his hands again and he could go back to being a neurosurgeon, but that the world would be all the lesser for it, he goes on to fight Dormammu and shows that he's really internalized this lesson about living for others. Then he comes to the end of the movie. We see Doctor Strange staring at his hands again, and they're still shaking from the effects of the injury, which tells us that he has chosen not to go back to his old life. And at that point, the hands, instead of becoming a symbol of his mania and his egotism as they were at the beginning of the movie, they become a symbol of his roots. He's kind of reminding himself of where he came from so that he keeps the right goals in mind. I also like to think of the hands as a symbol for the state of his heart in this movie, that his heart is riddled with problems because of his pride and self-absorption. He's basically an emotional and relational cripple because he is unable to get past himself enough to really value and respect other people. After his accident, when he's had all of the pins and ligaments and other things repaired through extensive medical procedures, his internal problem has become an external problem. The state of his hands after the accident is symbolic of the state of his heart at this point in the movie, that it's full of crutches and false connectors and feeble attempts to look like or act like an emotionally stable person. But once he has lost his hands, and his heart, of course, is still so disabled, he becomes frantic and desperate to find some other crutch for meaning in his life. Or for him, it would be preferable to simply fix the crutch that he knows is reliable, which are his hands. Some other themes in the movie are about surrendering power in order to gain control. We see this in Doctor Strange's training as he tries to learn how to control the magic. We also see it as he grows in other ways and learns that instead of controlling his relationships, he needs to surrender to them in order for him to have an influence on them. There's also the theme of practice, where we see Doctor Strange really work to gain the understanding that he's coming to about the world. I think this is a little unusual for most melodrama movies, because in many melodramas, the character simply discovers this special power that they have and are able to control it and use it in massive ways very quickly. Doctor Strange obviously has gifts for the mystic arts. However, it also takes him considerable practice and time in order to wield them appropriately. All right, now let's talk about some of the things that were less clear or less consistent about the movie. The first one, I think, is the understanding of time. This is also a great theme to follow through the movie, but what I wanted to point out was that this movie, like all fantasy movies, has problems with the time warping, and it requires some warped logic in order to understand the climax of the movie as well. When we're introduced to the time warping, Doctor Strange is experimenting with it in the library, and he's made a magic time wheel that he's turning forwards and backwards on certain objects. And he turns it forwards and backwards on this apple to see it be eaten and start decaying and then be reformed and a whole apple again. Then he uses it on one of the books, the book with pages missing, and he gets to read the missing pages that Caecilius has stolen about the dark dimension. And this scene serves two purposes. One is that it introduces us to the concept of the time warping and how it might work. The second is that it shows Doctor Strange reading the dark dimension pages that have been stolen. But for a conversation about time, later in the movie, we get to the climax, and Doctor Strange and another sorcerer show up at the last protective sanctum for the Earth as it's going down in flames and allowing Dormammu, the dark magical being, to come onto the Earth. And when Doctor Strange sees this happening, he puts on his magic clock and starts turning time backwards to reverse the sanctum's falling and push Dormammu back out of the earth. Now, the first logical problem with this sequence is that some people can leave the time warp in order to be moving forward in time, even while the rest of the scene or the rest of the world, it seems, are moving backwards in time. In this case, Doctor Strange himself is moving forward in time while the rest of the world is moving backwards, and he like shimmies his time clock over Mordo and he leaves the time reversal also. However, as Mordo and Doctor Strange move forward in the scene, literally and through time, they're moving forward, Caecilius, the villain, and his acolytes somehow manage to leave the time reversal also. It's not clear how they do this or what the rules are about leaving the time warp, especially when the person controlling the time reversal hasn't invited or intentionally pulled the person out of the time reversal. But you just have to have someone for him to fight with. So I guess that's why it happened. The other problem with this climax to the movie is that it creates this interesting ethical problem. When we're introduced to the time warp with Doctor Strange, Wong and Mordo, both other sorcerers at the Kamertage, walk in on Doctor Strange while he's doing this time warping, and they say, "Oh, you can't do that. You're breaking the natural law. You're making a time loop. You are switching dimensions." The way that they say it, it kind of sounds like Doctor Strange is like on one platform of time, and that by messing with the time loop or moving time forwards and backwards, he is switching onto another dimension of the multiverse and creating a new reality, or rather participating in a different reality than the one that he started from. It's not totally clear. I could have understood this wrong, but that's how it seems to be explained from Wong and Mordo. However, when we get to the end where the sanctum in Hong Kong is going down in flames and Doctor Strange is reversing the sanctum from falling down by using time to roll it backwards, to rewind the situation and do it over again, we have this ethical dilemma then of, well, what happened to the other Earth? If Doctor Strange and the other sorcerers, the other good sorcerers, actually want to protect Earth, then why are they just skipping out on this dimension that is obviously falling apart? What makes it okay that they can just leave and go back to a dimension where Dormammu doesn't get in, when the other dimension of Earth still has Dormammu coming on? This dilemma could be solved by the understanding that Dormammu exists outside of time. Now, this is a really messy thing to try and do, but I think they did it fairly well. Dormammu supposedly exists outside of time. And so if we understand that he is outside of time, but Earth and everyone on it are inside of time, then Doctor Strange reversing time in Hong Kong so that Dormammu is removed from Earth might not mean that Dormammu is allowed on Earth in another dimension. It might mean that he's completely shut out from Earth. And in fact, that's what is implied by the end when Doctor Strange says, take your zealots from the Earth and leave Earth alone. However, it's not completely clear. And even if that were true, that Dormammu wasn't in those other dimensions, those other cities have still been pretty much demolished by Dormammu and are now, explanationless and also sorcererless, because Doctor Strange didn't stay in that dimension. He left that dimension in order to be in the new dimension where Dormammu is ejected. There's also the question with the time looping as to why Doctor Strange didn't think of reversing time as the Ancient One was stabbed, like why he didn't reverse time long enough for her to recover. It seems like maybe she was going to die anyway, or she says, "I've prevented countless horrible futures, but they all end up here." in her conversation with Doctor Strange as she's dying. So it implies that eventually she's going to die like this, and that it only varies in how she's getting to that point. However, since this is kind of a critical battle for the Earth, it would make sense to me if Doctor Strange just decided to reverse it a little bit and prevent that from happening right now, or rather right now in the movie, so that she could be there for ejecting Dormammu before she dies sometime. So there are the questions about time. Another issue with the movie is the understanding of the dark dimension. The dark dimension in Doctor Strange is a little bit ambiguous and vague at the beginning of the movie. And in fact, the first time that my husband and I watched the movie, we thought that maybe it was like a misunderstood dimension. Like maybe it had been used for evil by many people, but could be used for good. And the reason that we thought that is that Caecilius steals these pages in the very first scene of the movie. He steals these pages about how to access the dark dimension, and his whole method for contacting and inviting Dormammu to take over the Earth comes from accessing the dark dimension. Dormammu is not equivalent to the dark dimension insofar as I understand it. He just exists in the dark dimension. But it's Caecilius's access to the dark dimension that puts him in touch with Dormammu. It's like some kind of cosmic operator on a metaphysical phone line that's connecting Caecilius to Dormammu or something. I don't know. In any case, it's also revealed in the movie that the Ancient One has been living for thousands of years. She's an ancient Celt and never talks about her past. That she has been living for thousands of years on power that she has been drawing from the dark dimension. And one of Caecilius's guffs with the Ancient One is that she's a hypocrite in this way, that she tells her students not to access the dark dimension, not to draw power from it, but she's been drawing power from it this whole time. So for those reasons, my husband and I thought that maybe the dark dimension was just a neutral power source that was being channeled into some very large evil beings like Dormammu, but could also be harnessed by good beings like the Ancient One. However, as everyone in the movie seems to agree, the dark dimension is definitely evil, definitely bad, full of dark things and evil things and hunger and malice and other badness. There are two things that don't make sense about this understanding of the dark dimension. One is that the Ancient One says that she hated drawing power from the dark dimension all this time, which means that for thousands of years, this supposedly wise, balanced, competent leader of many sorcerers and teacher of many people, that for thousands of years, she has been imbalanced at her center because she has been drawing power from the dark dimension and hating it the whole time. This in and of itself is a pretty interesting question point for the movie, because it is asking the question of, is the end more important than the means? And if so, how much more important? Or at what cost? Like what cost is too high for the end to be achieved by those means? Mordo's big line in this movie is that the bill always comes due. The bill always comes due. He says it several times, and what he means is that you don't get something for nothing. There are always consequences to follow every choice. And what doesn't make sense about the Ancient One's dependence upon the dark dimension is that she is supposedly a very emotionally stable, reliable, powerful person, and that comes from her deep roots in personal understanding and self-mastery. However, having a deep conflict like this about drawing power from the dark dimension for thousands of years seems like it would necessarily destabilize her as a leader, that even if she could keep that up for a little while, that it wouldn't last very long. It never really resolves that problem to me. There's another obvious question that goes along with this theme, which is, why couldn't the Ancient One draw power from one of the benevolent life-giving sources in the multiverse that she mentions in the beginning as she's introducing the multiverse to Doctor Strange. She says that there are some places in the multiverse that are benevolent and life-giving, and that there are some places full of malice and hunger. So why couldn't she draw power from one of these sources instead? It's not clear. The last thing that I think is worth talking about from Doctor Strange is Mordo, who is a side character to Doctor Strange and the Ancient One. He's a strong side character and he has a lot of interesting moments, but his main role is to introduce Doctor Strange into the Kamertage and to be a supporting sorcerer for Doctor Strange's combat against Caecilius. At the end of the movie, though, Mordo is so disturbed by the fact that the Ancient One has been drawing power from the Dark Dimension that he defects from the other sorcerers, and as we see in the epilogue, he takes it upon himself to remove the ability to do sorcery from the sorcerers in the world. He says something like, "I finally know what's wrong with the world. It's that there are too many sorcerers." Presumably, they would explain exactly how he does this in the sequel or a subsequent movie. But for the purposes of this movie, what mainly bothers me about Mordo's character is that he's a really strong advocate for the natural law and for the right thing to do. He, more than anyone else, is a merciful character in this story, that he has compassion on Doctor Strange as he's looking for the Kamertage. He brings him to meet the Ancient One, and then when the Ancient One refuses to teach him, he patiently but persistently suggests that maybe she should reconsider, maybe she should let him in, he could be a strong ally, etc. It's because of him that Doctor Strange gets any help at all. And then Mordo is a really good friend to Doctor Strange from that time onward. He's good at explaining things, he's a good teacher, he's very respectful for the Ancient One. And that all starts to change when Doctor Strange confronts the Ancient One about drawing power from the Dark Dimension. Mordo is overhearing this and gets really disturbed, and he starts defending the Ancient One, saying, "She would never do that. She would never draw power from the Dark Dimension. You don't know what you're talking about." And the Ancient One, instead of reassuring Mordo, just walks away. This is another point at which I feel like the Ancient One's character cracked a little bit in its consistency, because she's kind of seen everything. She's been around for thousands of years. She's had many students and at least some of them, including Caecilius and his acolytes, defected, called her a hypocrite, killed some of her other sorcerers, and accused her of drawing power from the Dark Dimension, which as it turns out was true. But at this point in the movie, when Doctor Strange is confronting her about it in Mordo's presence, and she can obviously see that Mordo is disturbed by this accusation, and he's waiting for her to defend himself, instead of reassuring him, meaning Mordo, instead of reassuring Mordo, she just walks away, as implying that she accepts the guilt from Doctor Strange, as if she feels awkward about it or something. And she does say later that she's hated drawing power from the Dark Dimension all these years, but, you know, it's not like this is the first time that she's been accused of this, and it's also not the first time she's ever thought about whether this is consistent with a good sorcerer or not. She's had plenty of time to reconcile with this. Maybe she hasn't reconciled with it, but she's at least been confronted with it before, and so it seems really inconsistent for her character to have this position of leadership with Mordo, to see his distress as she is being accused and as he is trying to defend her, and to do nothing about it. This is a big part of why Mordo leaves them behind in the end, is that he feels like she lied to him the whole time. And also, it is suggested that this is why Caecilius left too. So in the end, Doctor Strange is a fascinating movie, definitely worth watching, probably worth watching a couple of times, especially if you really like Marvel movies. The one reason I might consider not watching it many times is because it is still kind of violent, like a Marvel movie usually is, but it's fantasy violence, so that dulls the edge of it a little bit. could it have been better? Could it have been clearer? Could it have been more powerful? I think in some ways, a couple of the characters could have been made more consistent, but considering the vast amount of metaphysical and philosophical theory that they were trying to pack into one movie, in addition to being a melodramatic action movie, it's pretty amazing all the things that they managed to do. On my scale of movies, I have a scale of 5 levels for the movies that I watch, and I would put this at about a level 4, which means that it's worth watching a few times and talking about a lot. I wouldn't make it a ritualized movie. That's my level 5. I preserve that for, you know, my absolute favorite movies that I watch every year. And I don't think Doctor Strange is one of those, but definitely worth several watchings and many good conversations. Hopefully you found something helpful to you. There's definitely plenty to talk about and plenty to process. Thanks for listening to episode number 1 of Story Talk. See you next time.